Hi, this is Chris Evans with another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, it's just Martin and I again. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm not bad, thank you. How about you?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Looking forward to a decent conversation.
Absolutely. So just for the record, and in terms of putting a timestamp on this particular podcast, this podcast was recorded the day that British Airways got a £182 million fine from the ICO in the UK over their GDPR issues. So that's a good way of working out what day it is.
It is, and it's also sadly a day where probably many people who we've probably worked with in the past are probably wondering about their jobs.
Are you thinking about Deutsche Bank?
I am indeed.
Yeah, amazing, amazing.
I mean, people often talk about the investment bankers, but they forget that there's lots of backroom staff, and we've known lots of people who've worked in the Deutsche Bank in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sad thing to say. So hopefully, or see. So hopefully, those people will find work elsewhere.
Yeah, hopefully they will have a decent landing. So yeah.
Right. Let's move on to our topic of the day, which is an interesting one. And actually, in some respects, you know, you could look at what we've just talked about people in companies that might be in distress or not doing well. And that's the whole subject of the acquisitions we've seen recently in the storage industry. I'll just replay a few for you, Martin, so we can see who we're talking about. So, for example, Violin bought some of the assets of XIO. DDN's been on the buying spree with Nexentra and Tintery. And StoreCentric, which is a new entity, seems to have gone completely crazy buying up people. So they've initially bought Nexan and Drobo as part of the restructuring of that company. And they've since then bought Retrospect, a backup company, and Vexata, a tier zero storage company. So there seems to be something going on in the industry, and we thought we'd just talk that through and see what we think.
Yeah, I think we're seeing consolidation. I think we've... And almost be a constant story, actually, Chris, in storage. We see these come every 18 months, 2 years, consolidation in the industry. But it'd be interesting to talk about what's driving it this time.
Yeah. So let's start with why people might be wanting to acquire in the first place. And I've picked out four things here, I think, that are probably relevant to the discussion. Some vendors might be looking to expand and buy into a bigger market, and this might be a way of doing it. Aligned to that is they may be buying customers in order to push their other products to those same customers. It could be an opportunity to increase revenue, as in, let's just make ourselves look bigger because we want to make sure we can survive in this market. And obviously, a lot of this is going to be driven as an opportunity purchase, as in assets that were basically cheap or were perhaps bankrupt assets. I think Tintery was bankrupt. And it's an opportunity to buy rather than necessarily any other reason than just the asset was cheap. What do you think is going on in this instance, Martin?
I think there's a combination of all four. So I certainly think that people are trying to find new markets. I think there's a lot of companies that are buying customers at the moment. The acquisitions who want to acquire customers, they're not necessarily that interested in the technology. But I think the increasing revenue. I think it's not necessarily about increasing profitability at the moment. I think people are trying to make themselves look bigger. So they maybe start to show up in the IDC figures or the Gartner reports. A lot of these companies need to be bigger so they can actually get some attention from enterprises, certainly the small and medium enterprises. So it's almost about buying that publicity. And actually buying something means you end up on the front page of computing, or at least in the middle pages of computing, or on the front page of a register. Chris Mellor will talk about you. That's good publicity for you. As people say, no such thing as bad publicity. Mm-hmm. There are some opportunity purchases, but most of them don't actually seem to make a lot of sense from a technology point of view. Maybe there's some assets, maybe there's some marketing organizations which people want to pick up, or a sales organization. But if these sales and marketing organizations are any good, many of these companies wouldn't be distressed in the first place.
Yeah, that's a fair point, isn't it? You know, they wouldn't be sitting there thinking they were an acquisition target. Let's start with the first one on the list, and it's a year old or so, probably now, this acquisition, Violin and XIO. So for anybody who hasn't heard about this, Violin, what are they called now? Violin Systems instead of Violin Memory, I think.
Yeah.
You think I'd remember that, but, lapse of concentration for a second there, you're thinking, what was it called again? That just shows you how often I talk to them. But Violin Systems acquired part of XIO. Now, if you remember, XIO came up with a new product, which is an edge computing device. Now, they didn't sell that. They turned that into a new company. and then they sold the old appliance business, the sealed units with disk drives in. They sold that onto Violin. I wouldn't have seen that as being a growth market or a profitable business because of the fact that, as you said, XIO themselves hadn't made that work. So I was really fascinated to see that Violin would make that acquisition, because unless they think their customers have a need for a tier one, tier two type platform as well as their tier zero Violin system, it seems from my perspective that that's just buying customers.
It feels like it. I'm not sure why Violin would want a spinning Rust story. That's never where they've been. Everybody thinks about Violin about as a performance company. Don't get me wrong, the XIO technology was good technology. It never managed to capture the market share that perhaps it deserved. It doesn't seem to be a logical fit with Violin. Mm-hmm. Unless Violin was struggling to carry on talking to people and needed a new set of people to talk to.
Yeah, it could have been. Now, I think you're right about the technology being good at the time. If you go back to when that technology first came out, the idea of a system where you sealed the drives and done extra work on the firmware and other components, and like, you know, the way the drives sat in the actual in the chassis and everything, to pretty much guarantee that you would have something that would survive 5 years untouched, putting into a data center where you don't have to go in and pull drives all the time, that was a good story because you could see plenty of places where that would work. Possibly their issue was the fact that it didn't get matched with features. But when they moved on to the flash type solutions, I'm not sure whether the flash solutions still had that same merit of the ability not to have to pull drives out of them and put drives in. You know, that story perhaps had gone on a bit, had gone by that point, and it wasn't really a good story to talk about anymore. So from that perspective, as you said, it just seems a bit odd to go back to a spinning Rust company.
XIO sale was very often a TCO sale. Buy this, you know what you're going to pay. You know what you're going to pay for 5 years. There'll be no year five huge maintenance increase. It will just work. And actually, we don't. And the idea was it was so reliable. I think they didn't believe they needed very many engineers, field engineers, to go out and fix these things. So it was good, solid technology. I think it's the sort of thing you might stick on a ship.
That's a perfect point. Yeah, it might have been good as these days. It might have, funny enough, look good as what people might start calling an edge device, in the sense that it could go in rugged requirements and things like that, where you might not be able to get there to actually do anything with it to modify it or update it or upgrade it. So yeah, that would make complete sense.
Maybe it's generated enough revenue for Violin to take it on, but for the remaining part of XIO, they know it's a functionally mature product and they really wanted to focus their efforts on their R&D and their edge computer device. It was a distraction now.
Yeah, and I entirely see why they would do that. That made complete sense from XIO's point of view to say, this is the product that we see a future in. And I guess from a positive side too, we should look at it and say, at least they didn't just drop those customers. You know, we see plenty of other vendors. Google is a great example of that, where they'll have a platform or a feature and they'll say, we're not doing that anymore. That's going to be discontinued. And suddenly you're left in the lurch. At least they did do something and have a transition strategy for customers, so that customers who still wanted to carry on using that product would have somebody to look after them.
They obviously just didn't want to be in that part of the storage market anymore. Violin still see themselves as a storage company. As I say, it gives them a whole bunch of customers who, I think most XIO customers were pretty happy in general. They had some happy customers to go and talk to, then try and pitch the newer, faster devices.
Mm. Now, I can see that working too as well. Does that make sense? But let's move on to DDN and their acquisitions. Now, this has been really interesting. So we saw the demise of Tintri last year. And just for the record, I did do some work for Tintri in the UK not long before they went under. Nothing to do with me, just simply that we were working on some messaging and strategy. And it just so happened that that was just bad timing, really. But I did do some work for them.
Yeah, they didn't get you on board fast enough, Chris. You could have sorted their messaging out.
It could well have been that, yes.
That was it. They got you involved too late.
Yes. So we'll tick that one up to their learning experience. But on a serious note, we talked to Kieran probably 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago. Yeah. He was one of our early podcast guests. Hmm. And when you hear what he was saying about what they were doing with the technology, there were some really interesting things in it. But pitching it against other all-flash solutions possibly wasn't the market focus. However, they didn't make it work. They were unlucky enough to get bought in while they were still up and running. So they were acquired as a bankrupt sale, as far as I remember. And that was by DDN. And that, I think initially people might have thought, oh, DDN, really? And they've kept it separate, called it Tintri by DDN, almost like a don't know, is that a fashion brand way of saying things?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe you're gonna have to say, maybe you're gonna have a perfume scented Kieran or something like that.
Yeah. Versatility by Meryl Streep, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's, I pinched that from The Simpsons, by the way, in case you hadn't realised. And then they had, obviously, they acquired Nexenta. Now, that one really surprised me because Nexenta had two products. I had Nexenta Store, which was basically a software version of a dual storage, dual controller array. And they had Nexenta Edge, which was an object store, which I never saw anywhere or saw anything about. So I really was quite interested when I saw that side of the purchase from DDM because I couldn't quite really understand it. And I don't know whether you've got any sort of insights on either of those two purchases.
I don't get it. I'll be quite frank. I've not understood why they went and bought Nexenta. Nexenta, far as I seem to remember, was an open source product, really. So there was a freemium type product. It didn't make sense for DDN. It didn't even seem to fit in the market. Unless, there is a big unless, a lot of DDN's market has been academics. And I'm wondering if they saw quite a lot in some of their core academic market. That's the only thing which I could think of.
Oh, that's interesting. So what you're saying is that you think that the academic market probably would have been quite receptive to an Accenture type solution?
Might have been.
Mm. What about the Tintree side of it?
I know DDN have been trying to think of how they actually have a virtualization VMware product for some time. I mean, it's a conversation which I know has come up with them a lot of times, and customers saying, oh, we love your stuff, but do you have something which support virtualization? And they did in many ways. They could stick NFS out the front, but they didn't have anything more than that. So I'm just wondering if that was, and that's what Tintree's core market is. It allows them to have more conversations. I think for them, it's just about broadening the conversation with customers.
Yeah, so that's an interesting angle, that idea that, if you're a vendor these days in, say, the storage arena, or I guess it could apply to a lot of different areas, but obviously we're focusing on storage. But if you're in that storage arena and you go to a customer, especially an enterprise customer, and they say, well, we like your product X, but actually we've got requirements X, Y, and Z. So what can you do for us in those other areas? Because, you know, you might be quite good to us as either a sole supplier or one of a very few numbers of suppliers. We want to narrow that down and make the purchasing process a lot easier for us. And that might include, for instance, we want to buy your object platform or whatever. And if we buy two lots from you, do we get a discount on some of the other stuff? You know, that could be part of the purchase thinking. So I wonder how many times people like DDN or Violin go into a customer who literally says, great, but we want more of a portfolio from you of offerings so that we can actually put you into our, what's the best description? So we can put you into our preferred supplier list as being a solution for a number of different requirements.
Yeah, so DDN can actually hit more of the enterprise's service catalog. There's been lots of enterprises have a service catalog. So you'll have a block storage service, which is designed for VMware or for generalized boot. You're probably not going to do that off of DDN. It's not redesigned what it's for. So DDN can actually provide the boot environment, the compute environment, as well as the data environment. It allows them to tell a bigger story.
Mm. I think definitely that's what I could definitely see with those first two. And they certainly seem to make sense from that perspective. Now, let's just think about the third one, store-centric. And this one's a bit more interesting. And the reason I think it's a bit more interesting is, first of all, it's a combination of Drobo. It's add to that Nexen. And those two were the original first two companies. So basically, I'm not entirely sure how the company was spun out, but effectively, the CEO of Drobo became the CEO of Storecentric. So it was clearly related to the owners of Drobo. And I'm sure we could dig down into the detail and look at whatever Chris has got online. Chris Miller, that is, because I'm sure he's got this in infinite detail. And maybe I'll dig out some details for that. But ultimately, those were two, what you might class as both either prosumer SMB, certainly with Drobo, and definitely SMB with Nexen. They then recently acquired Retrospect, which is an SMB backup product. So that sounds great. You're filling out a portfolio of data protection and primary storage. And then they buy Vexata. And again, sorry to go on about it, but for the record, I've done work for Vexata. I did a white paper for them. So just declaring that up front now. that was very much designed as a tier zero enterprise storage system. And it just strikes me that the existing clientele and the clientele that might take a Vexata system seem very, very different.
Yeah, I like yourself, it doesn't appear to be a logical extension of their business. It's completely different. If you're talking to an SMB, which is Retrospect, Nexan, even Drobo, that's a much smaller end of the SMB type market. Why do they want an NVMe flash array? It does not compute.
No, it doesn't, because anybody who hasn't looked at Vexata, let me just fill people in. That box is basically an all-flash system that uses NVMe internally, uses NVMe over fabrics at the front end to deliver response times that are down to the sort of 40 microsecond level if you're using Optane technology. So it's super fast, super high throughput and performance. I guess you pay the price for that. You know, that's probably reflective in the price. I don't know the pricing of the product, so I couldn't say. But it just strikes me that from a number of reasons. Number one, that is a totally different marketplace. It's a totally different type of sale. And also the development and the research and development, the work that you need to do to develop that platform, seems to me that would need a lot more investment than, say, some of the other products we just talked about.
Yeah, we've got some interesting customers, Vexata. Be interesting to know how many of them are actually using this in any real angers, because some of the companies are quite large. Mm-hmm. But the use cases they talk about on their website, financial trading, risk and fraud analytics, AI, machine learning, and IoT stroke analytics. Those aren't SMBs. That's not their core base, unless they're thinking it gives them an into those as well. But that would be a very different sale, I would imagine.
I would say it would be too. And a lot of those customers, almost exclusively probably, would want to see a box on trial, would want to put it in as a test box for a couple of weeks, a couple of months. You know, you might get it back eventually, but ultimately, they're going to want to take their time to really kick the tires on it and see how it works. Whereas the other products in the portfolio seem to be more commodity storage sales. You know, you go out and buy a Drobo for a small use case and possibly even buy it through a reseller or somebody else, you know, through the channel. You might not even be buying it direct. Whereas I would have thought Vexata would have been more likely to have been a direct sale than specifically through channel. But I could be wrong, but that, you know, that's the feeling. So they just seem to be at odds, and I'm struggling to see what the Americans would call synergy in this deal.
Yeah, I don't believe there is any synergy. So maybe somebody from StoreCentrics out there wants to come and talk to us. That would be great to talk about. Mm. So understand a bit more about why they've decided to acquire Vexata, for instance, where the synergies are with their existing customers.
So let's just step back a second on this one, because there's one other angle that I haven't really sort of touched on in detail that might be relevant here. If you look at the StoreCentric website, they talk about a portfolio of products and companies. Now, is the aim here to build up a portfolio of solutions and run them semi-independently because they believe each of them could be an individual going concern? Or is it the real cross-pollination of ideas and technologies? Because if we look at the way, say, some other vendors in the marketplace have done it, the EMC portfolio holding process isn't something it's something we've seen before many times. EMC would buy everybody up where they could and hold that as a portfolio of technologies, but not necessarily spend a lot of time integrating them. They'd certainly sell to those customers, cross-sell to those customers, but they wouldn't necessarily integrate the products too heavily. So do you think there's a bigger picture here about trying to build a portfolio of companies that deliberately don't necessarily have a connection?
I can see it. I'm not sure it's... I'm not running my own business. I can see that there might be something there, but I don't know if it really works, because people look for strong brands, and often people want a strong umbrella brand. Dell EMC, love them or hate them, Dell, for instance, is a very strong brand. EMC were a strong brand. So whereas StoreCentric, that has no brand recognition.
Absolutely, as Mark Simpson would say, who the hell are you? You know,
yeah.
I agree that I can't see any brand recognition in that platform at all. And in fact, actually, when they did merge together, the initial companies, the Drobo and the Nexan side of things, I remember going to their website and finding their website just didn't exist. And it really surprised me that if you were building a brand that you wanted to promote from that point onwards, you'd have a bit more about your website than literally a blank page. You know, you'd promote it a lot more because you'd want to talk about those synergies. So I think this is one to keep an eye on, because I think either there's a really good strategy there and we just haven't seen it, or there isn't at all and it was just a great opportunity to buy.
Yeah, it could be. Great opportunity to buy. Maybe there is almost certainly there is a good product there. Maybe it's a chance where they could pick it up, keep it on, not on life support, but ticking along, and then hopefully somewhere along the line, HPE or somebody like that come along and buy them. They spin it off. They almost become like a VC storage company, rescuing stuff to be sold on at a later date.
Yeah, then that's an interesting angle. So that was going to lead on to what my next question was going to be, and that was, how on earth does a company like StoreCentric afford to buy somebody like Fixata? Because from memory, I think, I'd have to go back and check, I think they had about $50 million in investment. Now, if I was a VC, I wouldn't be too keen to take a haircut on that if I could possibly avoid it, unless it was either that or nothing. So there must have been some money coming somewhere to sweeten that deal somehow. So I just wonder where the money's come from in that deal. Now, the other two, DDN, I think there's probably, I'm fairly certain that's a cash profitable business. I'm sure they've got the money. So that was probably okay. Violin XIO, I thought Violin was backed by VCs as well. So maybe VCs see some value in that and have been prepared to put some money in. So where the money's coming and what they're paying for these, I think is a really interesting discussion.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much they're really paying for them.
Well, they haven't announced anything. So that immediately tells you that they don't want to talk about it because, well, somebody doesn't want to talk about it, probably the people who were acquired.
Yeah. How many of these were really fire sales? I think pretty close to a lot of them. I mean, something like Vexato, I mean, so they're doing NVMe over Fabric. It doesn't really matter how great a product it is. That involves quite a lot of money. Just your capital expenditure on actually buying the flash and the Fabric, even for your R&D work, that's not a cheap endeavor.
Definitely not. But I do like the idea of what you're saying, that they could be building a company where there's a bit of life support to keep everything going. And this allows them to keep it ticking over on the assumption that somebody comes along and pays a big chunk of cash later in the future. And they become like a storage VC as well as a storage portfolio VC, if that even exists.
Yeah, it's a very specialist VC looking at storage products. I mean, if we look at the things that StoreCentric bought, Retrospect's been around for a long time.
Mm.
It's probably good. But that made sense with Nexan, also been around for a pretty long time, and Drobo, so small business and slightly larger small business. That was that just seems like a good portfolio for them. Nexan had a good reseller model. I know they were very popular with some of their resellers, so it gave them a channel as well, and may even give them more of a channel for Drobo and even Retrospect. So that makes sense. It's Vexata which stands out. And if it'd be interesting to see what their fifth acquisition is, then we might be able to see what the strategy is.
Yeah, that might slot the last gap in that we've not been seeing. It might be like watching an episode of Catchphrase where bit by bit they reveal the tiles and suddenly you see the picture that's behind it. And all we're seeing at the moment is a splurge. We can't see what the picture's going to be. And then all of a sudden the last piece will be revealed, or at least another piece will reveal. And we'll suddenly think, okay, now I see what the strategy was.
It'd be interesting who's next. Who will be next?
Yeah, exactly. So that leads us on to that next question. Are we seeing a consolidation of the industry? Are there too many players? Could more people be acquired?
I'm pretty certain we'll see more acquisitions. It's just inevitable.
Do you think the industry is consolidating then? Do you think we're sitting with too many storage platforms?
We do, and I think it's very difficult for anybody to get any kind of FaceTime with people like myself. There's very few of the small companies who I really want to talk to. You've got to have something which just really stands out, because we just have limited time. So yeah. Getting it's luck for a lot of these companies to get in front of somebody like myself. It maybe you just catch us on a day when we're in a good mood, or we're in a bad mood with an existing vendor and we just want to talk to anybody else.
Yeah, that's a shame really, isn't it? But I agree with you. It's very difficult to think. If we could probably off the top of our heads draw a list up of, say, 20 or 30, easily 20 or 30 storage companies, and keeping up to date with them all, keeping on track of what they're up to, is incredibly hard for anybody who's an end user, never mind anybody else, you know. So you do end up pretty much focusing on the ones that you think are going to add you value, or possibly the ones that are noisiest in the market, have the biggest marketing, or, you know, something that makes them show up differently. And usually that means you need to have something pretty good as a feature set or something to make them stand out.
Yeah. Maybe some of these companies have been acquired by people who think they can start leveraging some OEM deals. So convincing somebody like HP or something like that to rebrand, as MSA's famously with Dot Hill Systems rebranded.
Mm.
So that's also a possibility. Maybe some of the consumer-led purchasing, they just get somebody to stick a label on front. Maybe Apple suddenly decide they're going to move back into storage and one of these companies convinces them to take it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting scenario, isn't it? Keeping companies going is one side of it, you just said, but also keeping them going so that you could try and get an OEM deal, which might keep the platforms alive for a bit longer, or might result in a bigger deal. Now, what does that mean that we think the long-term value for these companies is, or the long-term option? Because I remember drawing up a list in one of the podcasts we did a few years ago. And we talked about a lot of the AFA vendors and we sort of categorized them. And I think we had some of them in what you might call a holding pattern or a zombie group. I can't remember exactly how we described it.
Yeah.
But they were the companies that just seemed to truck on year after year, not really going anywhere up or down. And they still seem to exist out there. So, you know, it's difficult to see as we go forward what the long-term value and customer base is for these companies, because clearly a lot of stuff's gone to cloud. A lot of stuff might be moving towards SaaS if you're a smaller organization. So it does seem to me that this long-term survival plan is going to get trickier and trickier.
Yeah. Because flash technology is changing so rapidly, I find it's just going to be tough for them.
Mm.
I'm just looking at a list of the top 10 vendors from last year.
Hey, well done. Well done, you. Go for it.
Just looking, well, we don't know actually. There's ESG had something.
Oh,
so you have seen Caminario, XIO, ICE 900.
Mm-hmm.
HPE 3-Power StoreServe. Well, obviously, yeah, that's going to keep going. The NetApp AFA 800. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Eternus from Fujitsu. Flash System from IBM. Tegile's listed there. This is only last year. FlashBlade. Ventara from Hitachi. Nimble gets listed, but it's an HPE company. It's, mm-hmm. But how many of those are really viable players? I mean, even Hitachi and Fujitsu, how much of that do you really see? I don't see it get talked about very often.
I think Hitachi survives partly because they've got mainframe support.
Yeah.
So they still get that little niche in there, and they're OEM by HPE. So they've got a niche still, certainly in that side of things, that keeps them ticking along, which obviously they exploit. And if you look at their figures in the IDC numbers, it doesn't really change that much year on year, month to month. They do just stay in that list and they truck along. But what were the first ones again? Because I think that was an interesting start. ICE was obviously the one we've already talked about, the XIO stuff. I mean, no, that's gone to Violin. What was the very first one?
What was the very first one?
Oh, Caminario.
Caminario, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So Caminario has gone software. Now,
yeah.
I don't know where that's gone. I don't hear about them at all. I don't see any marketing from them. So I've zero visibility about how that business is going. So I just don't see that one going anywhere either. So it's interesting that even in 12 months, some of those people on that list have changed. I reckon if we went back to our previous lists, we'd see some real issues with some of the other companies too. One of the things I wonder is, and people in the UK will get this, not necessarily maybe anywhere else, but I wonder whether some of these companies are buying and merging to do basically the old Dixon's, Curry's, Carphone warehouse thing, where basically they think that by being a bigger group and consolidating, that somehow they'll make themselves bigger and they'll somehow address some of the cost savings they can make, but at the same time seem more attractive to customers because they're busy because they're bigger, which is one of the things we've already discussed. And that makes me think that there's a consolidation piece going on, partly because there's a lot of competition in this market and it's a bit tough.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think
So that idea of you get several weaker brands, or not necessarily weak brands, bring themselves together so you're getting footfall is going to be really important for these people, and it allows them just to make sure the names just kept getting spoken about. You need to be talked about all the time.
Mm. Do we think there's anybody we can think that we're not going to see in 12 months' time? I'm sort of semi-tempted not to put a finger on anybody because I don't want to be too unfair. But I'm sure there are people out there who are thinking, we're at risk as much as anybody else.
I wouldn't like to say. I think it's unfair. We've done it before, and it's fun. It's a fun conversation down the pub, but I don't think it's actually particularly fair for us to put it out in the public who we think may or may not be showing some kind of weakness or for whatever reason. Because one of the things I find sad, and it's what a lot of the conversations we'll be talking about these things, Chris, a lot of these products aren't bad. A lot of them are good products. There's some good engineers behind them. They're not out there to produce a bad product. And it's like a lot of things. There is so much luck involved with getting in front of somebody and then getting somebody who's going to champion this product. So I don't think we're at, I think there are very few really bad products. Yes, there are bad products, but most of the engineers out there are pretty strong, certainly when you're talking about all flash.
I'd agree, and I think in the storage industry, where we know the bar is very high, where you can't bring a product to market that's full of bugs and doesn't really work properly, isn't fully featured, people nowadays would expect a significant number of features. Good example being we had Vast on a few weeks ago. They brought a product to market which they launched with, which was a very, very good version 1.0 product. I know we said that there might be some additional features they need, but ultimately the core components were in there from day one, and they launched with paying customers. Now, if you're taking that approach, that's going to be more successful than it is doing it other ways, I think, these days. But you're right. The engineering is in there from day one, because you just couldn't do it in a storage platform if it wasn't there.
Yeah. Who's going to trust a flaky storage platform? And I noticed most of these startups, a lot of the times they're charging relatively premium prices because they're trying to convince people that they're going to get a competitive advantage about using their arrays. So a lot of these startups discount a lot lighter or nowhere near as heavily as the big players. So their product's got to be solid. It's got to bring something different to the market because they need the revenue, and because they're not driving value in their supply chain a lot of the time. So they'll be paying more for their bill of materials than, say, Dell EMC or HP or Pure. So their prices are going to be higher. So they have to come to the market with a product that is solid.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, well, I tell you what, at that point, I think we'll wrap it up and we'll say, let's come back to this one 12 months' time and we'll look at it and say, where are these companies? See if we can find that missing jigsaw piece that StoreCentric have probably looking to try and fill, if we think there is another acquisition going on there, and see how DDN have modified the Tintree platform. I think that'll be an interesting scenario to see when we look at these, is that, for example, DDN said they're going to keep Tintree and NextCentre as separate, air quotes, centers of excellence, or at least development groups. So theoretically, they're talking about continuing developing the product. So seeing a roadmap, seeing where the products go in the next 12 months will be probably key to us understanding whether this is actually a successful strategy or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good conversation. Right,
I think that was really interesting, Martin. Thank you for your opinions as usual. I think, as I said, we'll put a stake in the ground and we'll see what happens, unless somebody wants to come and tell us from any of those companies what their strategy is, in which case we'll be very happy to talk to them.
We will.
Okay. On that note, Martin, I shall wrap up and say thanks very much and catch up with you soon.
Yeah. Cheers, Chris.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.